We're going to finish the session up here with Dr. Sharon Rudy, who is a former faculty and senior program officer at the Center for Communication Programs at the Bloomberg School of Public Health at Johns Hopkins. She's worked in many, many countries doing things, designing, implementing, and evaluating behavior change communication programs, performance improvement, training, organizational leadership development. She's been managing a very large training budget, if I'm reading this right. Is that really $210 million over the last decade for the USAID-funded Global Health Improvement Fellows Program, and strengthening the pipeline of diverse global health professionals. So she may have had the most international experience of all of us. I'll let you add to that, Sharon, please.
Thank you. Okay. So, Joyce, thank you so much for the invitation. And I have to say thank you to you hardcore, diehard conference attendees who are in this session at 5:30 p.m. Hats off to you. And I noticed Mother Teresa's picture up there, and if we have time, I'll tell you about this big fight I got into with Mother Teresa. Which has nothing to do with leadership development, but it's a great story. So I want to talk about a specific context, and it's Americans working in global health. That's kind of where I've done most of my leadership development. And just a little bit about the context of the business of global health. Two things. One is it tends to be donor-driven, so it's the big funders, their vision. It's project-driven, so Americans working in global health tend to be sort of, we come in from the outside, we look at health systems, we design projects that have sort of a beginning, a set of implementation activities, and there's always a rush to evaluation and sharing of results because the funding usually is 1 to 3 years and five if we're lucky, which we usually aren't. That's kind of the setting that I'm working in. I got involved in leadership development when I took over the population leadership program, and this is so cool. Joe Hafey hired me. At that point, this was a project of the Public Health Institute funded by USAID, but before that I was working for the University of North Carolina at IntraHealth, so it's just such a small world. I had the luxury in the population leadership program of having staff who had their PhDs and masters in leadership development. So that academic view helped us differentiate the ideas that were rooted in evidence-based best practices around leadership development versus the things you sort of think are really good because, you know, you just sort of make them up in your head. So we did a lot of training in this project, and we were able to sort things into skill clusters, primarily, you know, leadership, which we were looking at behaviors related to scanning, focusing, aligning, mobilizing, and inspiring, as opposed to management, which is more about planning, organizing, implementing, monitoring, evaluation, which are really important. But we were really looking at leadership in this particular behavior change stream. And we are also particularly looking at influencing collaborations because that's such an important, I want to reinforce the relationship emphasis it to really the truth in global health as well. Didn't really matter to us where our participants were in terms of their life process. We were looking at leadership development from the bottom, from the middle, you know, and we would sort of transform those skills in relation to where somebody was in particular. It was a year-long process. It started with an initial retreat. There were workshops and trainings that were focused on sub-skills, and then we did in one-on-one coaching, journaling. There was a lot of self-reflection, a lot of the good practices that other programs have described, and then we had a formal alumni program. Now, this particular leadership development program was evaluated as one of six leadership development programs by the Gates Foundation and the Packard Foundation sort of got together, and that was a very well-resourced evaluation program, and They found good outcomes in almost all the leadership development programs that they evaluated on individual outcomes, organizational outcomes, and systems outcomes, with the typical limitations of self-reporting, attribution, and generalizability, which are always the Achilles heels of a lot of leadership development. Oh, there it goes. And then PEPFAR happened. And the population leadership program sort of evolved into the Global Health Fellows Program. So George Bush created the President's Emergency Plan for AIDS Relief, which I'm sure a lot of you know about and you've worked in, and it's affected your life as well. It was really an amazing moment in global health. Billions of dollars became available for a specific infectious disease. It was a top priority of the White House, and there's just nothing like the White House really caring about a particular thing to actually have things happen. So they created the Office of the Global AIDS Coordinator. I feel like I'm like suddenly in a bar. You know, thank you. That's great. Thank you. So billions of dollars were on the table for this initiative. It was a presidential initiative. And 24 different federal agencies came up and said and volunteered to be a part of the initiative. So they started the Office of the Global AIDS Coordinator, OGAC, which was run out of State Department. And it included Peace Corps, DOD, Department of Defense, a lot of other organizations. And over time, the two main federal agencies that stepped up and really took over, besides the State Department, was CDC and USAID. So we watched what was happening. My program is inside the federal government in the sense that we're contractors. We were with the Public Health Institute, and we have other organizations we work with. Most of us have secret security clearance. We get to kind of be inside and see what's going on. And we saw a train wreck. We saw organizations, federal agencies, that had such different corporate cultures that they were just unable to make these connections. And they were in a blood feud competition for the money. And some of you are shaking your heads like you know exactly what I'm talking about. Okay. So we decided that we were going to reframe some of our leadership development and really focus on collaboration because we saw how important it was. And with collaboration, some of the things we learned, we used two approaches. One is called the Enneagram, which is a model of sorting worldviews into 9 different types, depending upon where your attention goes. And the other model we used was interest-based negotiation skills. And some of the things we saw was these are 3 levels where things really matter. Collaboration starts inside. It's a really personal, it has to do with your intention, your desire to actually make that right connection. And I want to reinforce some of the importance of relationships that that were discussed previously. I wanted us to focus on the absolutely hardest thing in leadership development, and it is managing your reactivity. It's managing those moments when your buttons get pushed, and you just want to either kill somebody, or you leave the room in the head, or your head, or you actually leave the room. Whatever that just calls up, and you can't think straight, and you don't understand what's happening, and you don't even know what's happening. I don't know if you've ever written an email that you regretted. Have you ever written an email that you just, like at the time, it felt so great to write it, the righteous indignation was full on, and then you send it and you will never live it down? That's that reactivity, you know, that, and the behavior change is not writing the email, it's not sending the email, right? So these are some of the behaviors that we were looking at. We discovered that, and it just reinforced what you already know in your deepest, wisest self, that collaboration starts at the individual level, it's acted out interpersonally, and organizational culture influences the process and the possible outcomes. What we discovered in our work, and we did this at USAID, and whenever we always did this multi-party collaboration work with multiple federal agencies. There was either Peace Corps, DOD, USAID, state, CDC. They were all at the table. And then eventually it became CDC and USAID and state at the table. And we did this work in Washington, we did it in Atlanta, and we did it in about 6 different countries where PEPFAR had operating teams. And basically this was our takeaway. It's an inside job whether you're going to be collaborative or not. The organization can affect your possible outcomes, but if it doesn't start inside you with an intention to connect, it's not going to happen. I put this slide in like when I first put this session together, and it doesn't really fit, but I just love the work we're doing, and I'm going to forget about it and move on. Because it's what I need to do. So what is the most important factor in effective leadership? All the skills I mentioned previously are important to good leadership. And our own experience and the research tells us that's true. And these all need to be addressed. But I've come to believe over time in my work in transformational leadership development that there's a core truth, and it's the importance of managing your reactivity. Your buttons are never not going to get pushed. It's the nature of being human. But you can, with an awake inner observer, notice, and you can use inquiry to manage that internal turmoil that occurs. And it's sort of an aspect of emotional intelligence. It can be learned with practice over time. My staff will tell you that I am an imperfect student of this. But again, I've learned not to send those emails. And I've learned to notice when something is being kicked up. I've learned the internal cues when my buttons are being pushed. It's a developing technique for me and for others. And this only happens with this awake inner observer. The awake inner observer is not your critical voice. That voice that tells you you're an imposter and you're not good enough? It's not that voice. It's another objective voice that loves you and wants the best for you. So, I want to thank you for listening, and I'm looking forward to, the Mother Teresa story. Okay, for all those people who stayed. I was part of a youth, national youth level development project in Kenya, and the Kenyan government asked us to come together to spend 2 weeks in a isolated hotel in Nakuru. And Mother Teresa was pretty much of an icon by then, and we were working on a national strategy for youth health in Kenya, and I was working on a reproductive health project for youth. And so the fight, she was like 3 feet tall, right? But her energy was big and her power was enormous. I took Mother Teresa on because she didn't want family planning information to be shared at the adolescent level. And we went back and forth for 2 straight weeks. She never bought my story, but information on family planning was given to youth in Kenya.
Thank you.
We're going to switch over for a minute, and I'm just going to see if the if the panel wants to react, or should we just take questions directly from the audience?
Yes.
Okay, all right. Let's turn it over to you guys. And so if you would stand up so that everyone can hear you, and you can address it to an individual or to the panel, and we'll see who can give you the best reaction. Yes, let's give you the mic.
I think I can project. My name is Emma Ben, and I am an assistant professor and advised by the physician at the Mount Sinai School of Medicine. And my question is for Dr. Bain. I wanted to know if you could talk a little bit more about the curriculum at the Caribbean Health Leadership Institute. And I also wanted to know, given the focus with HIV/AIDS, have you thought about other areas of interest that you would like to
service we borrowed from the National Public Health Leadership Institute focuses on reflective learning. It includes self-assessment using three different standardized instruments. One's called the Change Style Indicator. The other is called the Fundamental Interpersonal Relationship Behavior, FIRO-B. And the third is a 360-degree assessment. Many of our participants have never done any self-assessment before, and it's really a revelation to them. Sometimes it creates some discomfort for them, but that's very important, we think. Then we cover things like system thinking, team building, consensus building, conflict resolution, and we set up a large group, large meaning between 30 and 40 persons, into small groups, each with a mentor, and give them about 6 or 7 months to do an action learning project that's relevant to contemporary public health practice in the Caribbean. Because many of our adherents are from HIV programs, many of the themes that we chose are to do with HIV or tuberculosis. But we have been broadening because, for example, universal health coverage is something that's coming up. Integration of HIV into primary health care is coming up, so that's one of the themes that we incorporate into our program. And that's about it, although the structure of the program is an early 3-day retreat and a late 3-day retreat. And between that, we do webinars, and we try to choose themes that are suited to webinars, less suited to face-to-face. So it's a blended learning program. We emphasize adult learning methods. So communication is another big theme that we have continued to develop. And we've had interesting experience of including an introduction to transactional analysis, which was not part of the National Public Health Leadership Institute program, but we find that our scholars relate very well to transactional analysis theory and its application into their personal and professional lives.
Another question? Okay.
So, I'm Bert Wilkie. And actually, I had the privilege of going through the Public Health Leadership Institute that Dr. Baker described. In fact, my dean recently, I've been at the University of Vermont for 10 years, and my dean, I stepped down his chair, and she said, "I'm really going to miss having you as a part of the leadership team because you're such an expert at collaboration." And I said, after 25 years in public health, I mean, you don't get anything done in public health unless you're a collaborator, so you learn how to collaborate. But what I'm concerned about is, in hearing the remarks, how do we keep from becoming kind of insular in terms of our approach to leadership? So how do we keep from becoming, subdividing into public health leaders at a regional level or at sub-discipline level? And how do we interact with leaders in other disciplines which influence where public health is going, political leaders, thought leaders, policy leaders? I do expect an answer from you, Ralph, but no one else.
I think you touched on this so well in your presentation. You should really talk some about this. But I think in the Institute, when we work with the leaders from the laboratory sector, which is very technologically driven, and they're overwhelmed with everyone wanting to do the newest technology, we spend a lot of time talking about how to work within the political system. If you don't get within the political system and you can't have a conversation with the Minister of Health, if the head of the laboratory network cannot walk into the minister's office and sit down and have a friendly conversation, then there, you know, we won't be successful in what we're trying to do in public health, which is improve health for everyone. It will be left out. And it, you can't be effective in running a public institution, whether it's in a developing or developed country, unless you work with the political system. I think we see in the United States now the fact that politics has no tolerance, does not understand how systems work, and usually the answer to any problem is to fire or reorganize the system, not fix the problem. So, you know, I think what you were talking about, Sharon, which is when PEPFAR came, it really brought all this to a head, because all of these little agencies are having these small fights, now have big fights because it was big money.
Exactly. I wanted to say something in addition, and there are people here who know much more about this than I do, but my understanding is that in the latest iteration of the Public Health Leadership Institute, which I think one of my colleagues at the Public Health Institute, Carmen Navarez, is involved in, that is, CDC designed that to be multi-sectoral. So the leadership development that is occurring is health and other local technical people. Is that, people are, yeah. Okay, good.
So I think they're right on the right track with what you're thinking.
Yeah, and add one other thing to that quickly, Bert, is that when we do policy and strategic planning, stakeholders really includes everyone. It's brought businesses, private sector, as well as public sector.
Just briefly, CDC invited us to start a public health leadership academy. We dropped the word public deliberately because we felt that all leaders in health needed to be involved. So our scholars are not just from the public health sector, they're from the broad health sector, and we're getting some very interesting cross-fertilization.
And with Great Basin, I would say that we had faculty who came from outside of the public health arena who were on the cutting edge of things that were going on in business. And our last few classes were very multidisciplinary. We included many people from nonprofit organizations. We had some elected officials. We had some people not from profit, but more nonprofit sectors, but they were as broadly based as people from food banks and so on. And so that really helped with that. And the National Public Health Leadership Development Network has been an absolutely fantastic resource to ensure that all of us are looking at best practices and looking very broadly for where we can find those best practices. I don't know if Kate or Lou wants to add to that, but there's your plug. Okay, let's take at least one more question and then we'll have the panel. We have someone back here. I'm going to defer because I was at the student assembly panel on the other day and I spoke on this very topic. So let's.
If you've spoken on the topic, why don't you say that?
I think some other people may have heard.
Oh, okay, sorry. Well, I would resonate with what you're saying. I think the leaders that we put up on the screen and the some that we kind of hold up particularly are very, ultimately, very humble people. And that, I think, provides an example for all of us in terms of just what leadership is all about. So I couldn't agree with you more. I see leading as a verb rather than as a noun. You know, we talk about leadership, but leading is, I see that as an action word. And I think that we struggle with humility because, you know, if we were to create some synonyms, if we did an exercise right now, perhaps one of the synonyms would come out, from our childhood is weakness. I don't think that humility is the same as weakness, and I'll just tease you with that.
So when you're running a federally funded program, it's less about your internal state than it is behaviors that are measurable. So I think you can see that we've all struggled with taking leadership development and looking at how one might evaluate behavior change as a result of that internal process. Humility to me is, I'm more interested in someone's self-knowledge of their, this, because self-knowledge will give you a balance of your strengths and weaknesses and normalize that. Like, I'm a person with strengths and weaknesses, and that's just who I am. And so, that's kind of.
Okay, so we have reached the formal conclusion, the end time for this session. I would cap this myself by saying, as a director and a leader of a program, there's always some kind of graduation celebration at the end, and we did projects every year to see how the students had progressed and what their best learning examples were. And it was truly humbling at the end of each year to hear those students stand up and talk about the learning that they had achieved, and knowing that it had nothing at all to do with me, and it had everything to do with what they did internally. And that was a truly humbling experience. Let's thank our panel one more time.